What really gets my dick hard is...
So fucking what? She has taught me well, told me when I was young. Son, your life's an open book, don't close it for it's done. The brightest flame burns quickest, that's what I heard her say. Son's heart sold to mother, but I must find my way.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 40, and we couldn't finish last episode without thinking about a part two for Mr. Hetfield.
Yeah. I'm actually really glad we're doing this, because the first one really felt like we wanted to get a lot of the meat and potatoes. We wanted to hit a lot of areas covering the career of this dude that we all love and respect. Now I feel like we can kind of breathe a little more, talk about some of the more fun aspects of James. Yeah. Just do a little more personal riffage, if you will.
Riffage is good.
On Jimmy James Allen Hetfield Esquire Junior Senior.
Junior Senior.
He's a junior senior.
He is.
Has that ever happened in the history of procreation?
Is it possible?
Well, not until Mr. Hetty Het.
I mean, I know you could be a junior senior if you, for instance, one of the drummers in my old band, he was John Wilson III. So John Wilson II, wouldn't he be a junior of his father, then a senior to his son?
I think we just cracked the code on this.
I'm smart.
You should see us at HQ. We're drawing this really elaborate family tree right now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. We're quick at that, so
we
it's already
pie chart
done.
Out
it's settled. You can be a junior and a senior.
Yep. So before we kind of talk a little more about James Hetfield, we wanted to do the things that we normally do by now. We do the same thing almost every show.
You should know this by now, everybody. Jeez.
We're going to talk about emails and stuff. So first, we want to mention our Patreon. We got a patron this week. His name is Peyton Moore.
Thank you, Peyton.
Thank you, Peyton. And to all of our patrons who support the show, who make all this shit possible. Because of the patrons, we're able to have t-shirts and patches and stickers and guitar picks. And we got a banner, and we're making an EP. That's all going to go to help mix the EP. We're actually started the process today of getting some of our EP mixed.
Yeah. It's coming together a lot faster than we thought.
So it's going to sound good. And so we couldn't be more stoked about that. If you don't know what it is, it's just a way for you to give back to the show. We've invested hours and hours of Metallica talk.
A couple hours, yeah.
Into the Metallica universe, the Metalliverse. Everything's going to be Metallica.
Yeah, Metallica something. I mean, this is episode Metallica 40.
This is Metallica
40. It's also, I mean, it's a milestone. We're at another 10 episodes in, you know. Episode 40 sounds crazy. But, continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, now I don't know what I was talking about. The patrons.
The patrons.
There's all sorts of ways you can sort of... People have been calling it like giving back to the show, which I think is really cool and appropriate. But we're trying to put some value onto that. So yeah. One of the coolest things you can do over at Patreon, which it's patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast, is you have access to this EP I just mentioned, where Ethan and I have covered some Metallica songs, put some kind of cool spins on the tunes.
Yep.
They're dark and brooding and cool, and I think you're really going to want to check that out. We did an EP teaser episode a few weeks back. You want to go listen at the fast forward to the end of that. We played The Unforgiven 3 and The Outlaw Torn.
Yeah, that's right.
So go check all that out, and you can interact with us on all the social stuff, the face crap and the...
Yeah, face crap, Insta crap, Twit crap.
Metallicrap.
Metallicrap.
Book.
Yeah, any social media you're on, just type in Metal Up Your Podcast, you'll find us.
And we interact with you guys all through the week. It's really fun. The most direct way you can reach us is via email. Our email address is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com.
Correct.
You want to start us off?
I do. Let's get to some emails.
Email time.
All right, our first email is from Joe Caps. He says, "What's up, brothers? Great episode.
Are we going to be doing that? Like,
I mean,
we're going to be doing that like 6 years
from
now.
When someone says, what's up, brothers, I assume they want me to do the Hulk Hogan voice. If you don't, please tell me. I'll stop. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to stop that shit.
There we go.
It's fun.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's right. He says, what's up, brothers? Good episode about Papa Het. As bad as super early Metallica days might have been, I do wish there was some footage of an early show before the New York trip. Before the New York trip, I think there is footage of that.
Well, there's just like real scattered footage. Like there's like them when James holds up. That actually is when I was thinking.
That was after. There's early stuff. There is early stuff with Mustaine and stuff in L.A. and San Francisco, and you can find it.
Yeah. Can you imagine if there was like footage of that first show, though, where Dave broke a string and they're doing like 10 minutes of kind of
and they did mostly cover songs. Yeah, for sure.
They did a bunch of Diamond Head songs.
He says it's always going to have some mystery buried in time. On the other side, James has that Gibson has crappy artist outreach for custom models that led to his jump to ESP. My favorite is probably the White Explorer from the Binge and Purge.
Yeah, I think so. We talked about that Iron Cross Gibson that we loved, and I think James has over the years reached out to Gibson to try to get signature shit.
Yeah,
but he could never really get it going over there.
Well, and that probably happened back in the 80s too, that made him do the jump to ESP,
right?
Because he was playing that stuff kind of late puppets into Justice. So.
All I gotta say is whoever's over at Artist Relations for Gibson really dropped the ball.
They're kind
that.
Of notorious for not being great, unless your name's Slash. It's like, but if you're James Hetfield, you should have anything you want from Gibson.
Hey, we're in this fledgling band called fucking Metallica.
Yeah, we've released like 10 records, and I think we're on the up. You guys should check us out. We're on our like 87th European tour right now. Anyways, Joe goes on to say, the stage and set list so far on the arena tour are so badass. He's speaking of the arena tour in Europe right now. The cubes and drones are pretty cool. See, I haven't seen any drone stuff. I've seen those cubes.
Oh, you haven't seen the drones?
There's drone footage, huh?
During Moth in the Flame, all these lights that are drones fly up above the stage.
I have seen that.
And circle the fucking band.
I didn't realize those were actual drones.
Oh my
God. That's amazing.
It is so cool.
Yeah, he said the cubes and drones are pretty cool, and I hope that I'm able to hit a few shows in the arena. And by the way, last week we asked you guys to give us your top five James riffs. So here are Joe's top five James riffs. He said it's a hard list to make, and I could answer differently next week, but here it goes. Number five, All Nightmare Long. Number four, Leper Messiah. Number three, The Thing That Should Not Be. Number two, Harvester of Sorrow. Number one, Ride the Lightning.
And I guess we can sort of deduce what these riffs might be, but some people were a little more specific. I'm going to be specific. Ethan and I are going to read our top five lists here at the end of the emails.
Yeah.
But, like, is his riff for Ride the Lightning the boom, bum, 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 or is it the bum, 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 bum?
Yeah. I guess we can go ahead and just say, like, it's probably the main riff in hand quotes I just did. So maybe it is the...
But that, you know what riff is so good in the song is the...
Yeah, totally.
Maybe it's that one.
It's probably that one. Well, Joe, thanks for the email. We appreciate it. And we are very excited about this European tour that's happening. They're pulling out some deep cuts. The production is totally different. I really hope they do that production in the States because I would love to see it in person.
And not to mention the set list is fucking banging.
Oh,
they did Man Unkind the other night.
Yeah. Leper Messiah recently. They've done a lot of
Damage
cool stuff.
Damage Inc.
Yeah. I think Helpless was in there.
Yeah, Helpless.
Dude.
Good grief.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Will Valor writes, the interesting thing about making this list, referring to he sent us his top five riffs, was remembering that a lot of my favorite Metallica riffs like Blackened, Jump in the Fire, and Inner Sandman were actually written by the other guys in the band. Anyway, here are my favorite written by the mighty Hetfield. Number five, Ain't My Bitch.
Nice.
Nice. Number four, Wherever I May Roam, classic. Three, Seek and Destroy. Two, Creeping Death. One, Harvester of Sorrow.
Wow. Okay, we got two of those already.
Very cool.
Interesting. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you, Will. All right. Next email is from our friend Kevin Van Dam. He says, hello, brothers.
Hey, here we go.
Should I do it?
Sure.
Hello, brothers.
There it is.
Feel free to coordinate with Dave / Hulkster tag team on that.
Oh, hello, brothers.
Hello, Dave. Hey, brother, I'm about to read this next email. Is that cool?
Hello, brother. Meet the real me.
He says, after watching the videos from the European tour, I had a few things to ask about. Number one, why do you think European set lists are featuring more deep cuts than the American tour? Are the European fans more accepting of songs that aren't mega hits? Are the venues part of the set list equation?
I don't think it's because European fans are that different. I think historically they're a bit more rabid, maybe. But
yeah, they are.
I think it's because they're able to play in more intimate shows. The stadium tour, they had to put their best foot forward. They had to make their most broad musical statement.
Yes.
Because they were playing to twice and sometimes three times the amount of people that they are going to be playing to an arena.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's just as simple as that.
Yeah. Good answer, Clint.
Thank you.
He said, next question is, why are they working on more songs from the new album, adding Confusion and Dream No More? Are those tracks more popular there? Maybe they are, but I think it's just them trying to get through all the songs on the new record and debut all of them live at some point.
Well, and I don't think they anticipated that this record would be as would land so positively with the fan base.
Yeah.
So I think that they're getting a lot of feedback, people wanting to hear these songs. I know damn sure I want to hear Dream No More live.
Yeah, I do too, and Man Unkind.
And they played Confusion a little bit at the beginning of the tour, but I mean, I still want to hear Here Comes Revenge. And of course, we're all waiting with bated breath for the debut of Spit Out the Old Bone.
Oh, Spit Out the Motherfucking Bone.
No!
He goes on to ask, what do you think of the synchronized drones during Moth into Flame? Clint answered that already. He thinks
drones are badass.
Drones are badass. Why have Metallica not... I skipped one. Why do you think this tour is so heavy on Black Album material? I mean, it's their biggest fucking record.
That's the answer.
I mean, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would like to hear, honestly, some more deep cuts from that record, but...
I would, too.
But, dude, there was monster hits on that record. I mean, you're going to play Understatement. You're going to play Sabbath Tree. You're going to play Nothing Else Matters. You know, you're going to play Rome.
Absolutely.
So I'm for it.
And but, you know, they are playing Through the Never on this arena tour.
That's right.
They are. In like slot four or something.
Oh, that's so awesome. See, I've never seen that one live either. I'd love to see that. And his last question is, why have Metallica not invited you guys to follow them to every tour stop to do a podcast for each gig? That's a great question.
Now, that's a wonderful question.
Yeah, we love that question.
Feel free to write into the boys at Metallica HQ.
Yeah, I think it's james@james.com.
Yeah. Jimmy James@JimmyJohns.com.
It's James Junior Senior at JuniorSenior.com.
At Jimmy John, because he works at Jimmy John's.
He's at Jimmy John's,
on the weekends, yeah. So that's actually why they only do three shows a week, because he's got to get back to his day gig at Jimmy John's.
Exactly. That would obviously be a dream come true if we got to do that one day. But for now, we're just going to be hanging out in my garage. It ends by saying, thanks as always for your work. The James episode was a great listen, and I look forward to you guys tackling the James topic again in a future episode. Well,
in
guess what?
The now.
We're here. Faithful diehard listener Kevin Van Dam ends by saying, P.S. I'm still on the lookout for a mint bandit Trans Am to become an ambassadorial conveyance for Metal Up Your Podcast.
The ambassadorial conveyance.
That sounds like a brutal band name. That might be the Hulkster's new band.
And playing up opening for Cattle Decapitation, we have all the way from Iceland, ambassadorial conveyance.
From New Jersey.
Oh, here, man. From Trenton, Iceland. All right, thanks, Kevin Van Dam. Our friend Sam Ward writes in and says, I'm currently listening to part one of the James episode and loving it. Glad to have you all with me on a slightly dreary Monday here in Nashville. It has been a dreary
couple of days.
He says, I love the Reload episode. I love how much hate those records get. I love Clint's love for them, and how the podcast has made Ethan go back and start to really appreciate them. And if I'm honest, they're both currently in my top five records, right behind Puppets, Black Album, and Lightning. I share some of that. Reload was my third favorite record. It's so funny to hear people bitch and moan about artists growing and developing. Ah, whatever. I cut my Metallica teeth on these records, and for me, the Loads are still what Metallica is to me for the most part. What else is there to say about you and... What is there... Oh, crap.
You're doing what I do now.
What else is there to say that you and Ethan haven't already said masterfully and hilariously on the show? Thanks so much again, and your podcast on Metallica and your pod... God damn it. What's happening?
You're turning into me, Stutterville.
Thanks for Metallica... I can't even read the sentence. I'm just going to skip it.
Thanks so much again, and your podcast on Metallica make my Mondays.
Okay, there we go. Jesus, that's quite the tongue twister. Sally sells... seashells. P.S. Are y'all planning on getting more picks made? If so, I'd love to get some. We do have Metal Up Your Podcast guitar picks. If you want those or any of our lovely merch that will make you more beautiful and more talented and more successful, shoot us an email, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Thank you, Sam.
Our next email is from our old listener, old friend, Darth Leviosa. Hello, guys. Talk about impossible. This is my top five Hetfield riffs. It is a bit tough.
It was hard.
Number five, That Was Just Your Life verse riff, which is essentially the main riff. How on earth does he sing like that over this riff?
Now, that's a great question, because
I have no idea.
It's a monster riff to sing over.
Number four, the Frayed Ends of Sanity bridge riff, starting at 3 minutes and 22 seconds. Really, this whole song, the shit James plays under the solo is incredible.
What James plays under solos is almost as intricate as some of these solos.
It is, yeah. It's amazing. Number three, One, the Machine Gun riff. I know it's all ease, but this is the riff that hooked me into the band. The variations on this theme throughout the end of the portion are stellar.
One of my picks is just a riff on E2.
Okay, okay.
And it's not that one.
Hmm, what could it be?
Hmm. Are you titillated?
I am.
Are you titty?
Definitely. You know me. Number two, Fade to Black chorus riff, the one under the No One But Me. I would say that's more the bridge.
Bridge, for sure.
Yeah.
Bridge
riff. But I know what you're talking about. Da, da,
da, da, the main riff would be the chorus riff, but...
Well, the chorus would be...
Right.
Yeah. He says, so majestic, especially that little descending part.
Yep.
And number one, Master Puppet's spider riff, he has in quotes, not the verse riff, not the intro descending chromatic riff, the riff right after that. You know the one. I think it's...
Absolutely.
The platonic ideal of a riff. Well, Darth, that's a great list. And he says, how does this list not include Battery? As I said, impossible to limit it to just five. Keep up the great work, Darth Leviosa.
All right, cool. Jose Gomez writes in and says, hey guys, loved part one of the Hetfield episode. I think it's safe to say that he's up there with guys like Tony Iommi and Jimmy Page in terms of influence in not only the guitar, but music in general. 100% agree.
Yep.
No matter how many other guitarists and singers come up who are probably more technically proficient than him, James will always be the standard to which us mortals measure. To which us mortals measure is also the name of a new metal band name.
Yeah.
I'm starting right now in my pants. Here are my top five Hetfield main riffs. Number five, That Was Just Your Life. After a lackluster album in Saint Anger, fans were wondering if the band can reclaim their spot on top of the metal world. After the heartbeat intro and as soon as that riff kicks in, there's no question that the boys, Hetfield in particular, are back. Those were my exact thoughts when I heard that
song.
Yeah,
same here.
It's a fun riff to play, and that's one of my go-to riffs for when I'm warming up. I like to play it too. One of my favorites. Number four, Hardwired.
Ooh, got a new record.
Our first Hardwired submission. He says, just as we were wondering when the band will eventually release an album, all of a sudden this drops out of nowhere. The riff is simple but effective, and it never lets up. That's true, man.
Very true.
Hardwired is just a no-holds-barred four-minute jaunt. Number three, Motor Breath. This song's been used as an example of Hetfield's rhythm playing back in the early days, and it definitely foreshadows things to come. Number two, Battery. Number one, Hit the Lights. Simply put, the one that started it all. Keep up the good work.
We will.
Currently doing it.
Currently keeping up that good work.
Head of you, bro. We're already doing it, motherfucker.
That was a great list, by the way. All right. Our friend Sarah Sobeck.
Sarah.
She's writing in. She says, I wore my Metal Up Your Podcast shirt to the Copenhagen show and both Amsterdam shows. Actually, I wore the shirt under it, too. I wore a shirt under it, too, hoping that one of the crew guys would see it, want it, and I'd have a shirt underneath when I ripped it off in a gentle Hulkamaniac style to give it to them.
What gentle Hulkamaniac. Hey, brother.
Hey, brother, here you go.
It's like not ripping. It's just like delicately just taking it off.
Exactly, yeah. This is still the goal for the five UK shows. She's going to a lot of shows over there. But please, when it happens, do not, I repeat, do not marry a Kardashian. I just cannot handle being the cause of your demise. Thanks, homies. Your number one fan, in my opinion. Well, tied with my girls, Jean and Kendalyn. Sarah.
Well, when the Kardashians come a knock-in, there's nothing that, the train's left the station on that.
Yeah.
We're doomed and destined to fall in love with them, marry them.
No, I'm not. Fuck that shit.
Oh, really?
That's too much work.
Really?
Yeah, for sure it is.
All right. I'll take all of them then. All right. Brian from... Oh, Bram. Bram from Rijen?
No, not from. Bram Van...
Van...
Rijen. Rijen?
I'm losing my mind today.
Rijen. Oh, I think I can help with this one.
All right.
This is Bram Van Rijen.
Okay, Rijen. All right. He writes, hey guys, just discovered your podcast and it's great. I wanted to share a little Metallica anecdote from my recent holiday in Sweden.
Oh, in Sweden.
When I was driving along with my wife and two kids through Sweden, I suddenly thought this must be the area where Cliff Burton died. I vaguely remembered it was the road between Gothenburg and Stockholm, so I looked it up on Google Maps and I was literally 5 miles away from the spot.
Wow.
There turned out to be a memorial site and I made a quick stop there to pay my respects. When I continued our trip, I forced my wife and kids to listen to Orion and be quiet for 8.5 minutes.
Good on you, dude. Yeah.
A special memory to a hero I later got to know about because I started listening to Metallica when they released Garage Days Revisited in 87, a year after Cliff's death. Keep up the good work. Bram from Rotterdam, Holland.
I'm from Holland. Isn't that weird?
This is my accent from Sweden, but this is my accent from Holland.
And for Torben.
And from Austria. And from New Jersey.
Well, thanks for writing in, man. And what a cool experience. I mean, if I was on that road, and well, of course you would stop.
For sure. Well, I mean, I hope one day I can go check it out and pay my respects.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure it was very emotional and very cool, fitting tribute to listen to Orion. Make your family be quiet.
Hey, man, your family's got to recognize.
You guys are going to be quiet for at least 8.5 goddamn minutes.
At least let me get through the bass solo.
Our last email is from a longtime friend of the show, Nick Roller, who writes, "Great episode, guys. Not much to add, really. I had to agree with pretty much everything. I came online with Metallica in 2003 at the crucial age of 14. It's definitely interesting to look back and recognize that my first encounters were with, quote-unquote, vulnerable James. I've always respected how self-aware Papa Head is, and words can't really express how much I respect his courage in letting the world see him hit rock bottom. His recovery is one of the most inspirational sagas in rock and roll. I, too, would love the opportunity to shake his hand and thank him for the lesson in being a man, husband, and father." Thanks, Nick. All right. Yeah, I agree. As we said on our last episode. Yeah,
very, very inspirational.
And that there was the emails. Are we ready to talk about our top five Hetfield riffages?
I think I'm ready to talk about that shit.
All right. Who's going to go? You going to go first?
I guess I always do.
God. I guess Ethan's going to go first.
Mine aren't crazy specific as far as... I got a couple little notes, but nothing crazy.
Okay.
Number five, the end of the line.
Wow.
The verse riff. Need more and more tainted misery. Bleed, battle scars,
chemical affinity. Yep.
It's just during the, yeah, during the verse. It's very, very reminiscent of a Puppets riff. When the second I heard Death Magnetic and I heard that song, when that verse came on, I was like, oh my gosh, this is Puppets era Metallica.
And don't they kind of revisit it in the solo and they start stacking it with harmonies and stuff? And they start climbing.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my goodness. And he's singing over that too.
Of course he is.
And he goes all the way up the neck. I love in the Quebec Magnetic performance of it, especially when they're playing that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Great. Good riff. One. Nice.
Number four. Wherever I may roam.
Dude, it's classic.
I mean, and I'm assuming everyone knows I'm talking about the main riff. You're an example of it, so you know.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. We're playing examples.
We're playing examples.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Number three, Battery.
All right.
And I'm talking that main riff you just heard. It's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what's played over the verse. He sings over it.
That's just a reoccurring theme, isn't it? That not only to write it and perform it and play it great, but to write a melody over it and to sing that over it.
Yeah.
It's actually songs like Battery that I just got to imagine when that shit was just coming down the old pipeline in 86 that people were like, they're the best.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, what a great album opener.
Great album opener.
And that riff still confuses me.
It is confusing.
It confuses me because it sounds like it turns around with Lars's drum beat. I mean, to this day, I've heard that since I was, super young. I'm almost 39 years old, and I'm still kind of like, what?
And they do it so effortlessly. Yep. Blackened is real similar.
Yep, totally. Number two, Master of Puppets, post solo. Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest parts in that song. Of course, the main riff at the beginning is great. The spider riff, as we heard about earlier, mm-hmm. is awesome. I remember the first time hearing that part of the song, and I was like, that is one of the coolest things.
It's one of my favorite parts of the whole record.
Yeah.
And I love that when they do that live, it's the moment where, I don't know how long they've been doing this, but they all kind of go around the drums for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a good little jam session.
And for those of you out there taking notes who are also guitar players, except for that first, da-da-da-da, it's all downstrokes. Go
all
try
downstrokes.
To do that shit.
Yeah, it's a little wrist burner.
It's no joke.
Yeah. Number one,
Let's hear it.
I couldn't help myself. It's my favorite song by Metallica. The main riff of Blackened. You can't fuck with it.
I know, but this is where I got to put you in timeout.
Why?
Because Jason Newsted wrote that riff. Go to the goddamn corner, put on the goddamn conch shell.
I need a dunce cap right now.
Oh, yeah. What did I just say?
Conch shell.
A conch shell.
What's a conch shell?
A conch shell is like in Lord of the Flies, like the kid who ruled the island held the conch shell. It's like a big shell that you listen to the ocean in.
Yeah.
Conch shell.
Well, I should get the conch shell and listen to the opening riff of Blackened and realize that it's Jason Newsted, not Hetfield.
Oh. I'm gonna give you a redemption slot.
Well, I will say it was a toss up between that, which now I'm reminded it's not written by Hetfield, and the verse riff.
Yeah, verse riff's killer.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll take that. Sorry, jeez. God, I didn't do great on the trivia last week, and now I'm pulling this shit. Might be time to get, like, Sarah Sobeck to co-host this thing with you.
It is deep knowledge to know that was the one part of the song that Jason got the co-write for.
And there's times, many times throughout the recording of all these episodes that, you know, you're kind of just like listening to stuff and you're making notes and doing stuff. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, dude, I love that riff. And you just have it in your mind that this is, you know.
The story about that is that before they started making, I think in typical James and Lars fashion, those two had written most of the material.
Right.
And James was hanging out with Jason at his house, and Jason played him a bunch of shit he was working on. And James loved that riff so much that he actually told Jason, that riff is good enough to open up our next record.
Wow.
And then, of course, we all know it went on to do so.
It definitely did.
So, do a recap of those riffs?
Do a recap of those. Number 5, At the End of the Line. Number 4, Wherever I May Roam. Number 3, Battery. Number 2, Master of Puppets, post solo. And number 1, Blackened, Now the Verse Riff. This better not be my new Outlaw Torn, by the way.
We had no overlap on our lists.
Interesting. Okay.
So for me, number...
It's a short list.
It's a short list. Yeah. Well, here's the deal. Some people said 5's too little, blah, blah, blah. That's what's exciting about it.
Well, maybe that's why I fucked up on the Blackened thing, because I felt so much pressure that I was like, oh, what do I do? And it's only 5.
Got to get that conch shell out.
I know.
It's conch shell time.
Where's the conch shell?
Someone delivered the conch shell. The conch shell brought it to the studio house.
Is the conch shell vegan?
But were any animals hurt in the making of the conch shell?
Okay, here are my top 5 riffs.
Let's hear it.
Number 5, Disposable Heroes.
Mm.
The super fast all on the E note. Yep. I can't even sing it correctly.
Yep.
And there are videos of James playing it as if he's eating a goddamn ice cream sundae.
Yeah. Well, he could, because it only requires one hand.
That's true.
He could eat an ice cream sundae. Well, he'd have to have a table to set the dish down on. He could eat an ice cream cone.
And it's not even really the fastest. I mean, the fastest riffs in those songs are in those pre-choruses. Soldier Boy Made of Clay.
Yep.
I mean, it's as fast as a human hand can go.
Yep.
All right. Disposable Heroes, number 5. Number 4, bringing in some of that new sauce. Spit Out the Bone.
Ooh, which riff? Yes, there it is. You heard it.
I just feel like it's sort of a new classic.
I think so.
New classic riff.
I think you're right.
Number 3, like one of our previous listeners, I had to go with The End of the Line.
Very cool.
Whoever, I can't remember who wrote that email, but they were right. It was a huge announcement.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you that it's my turn to call out your bluff.
Oh, wait.
Or your mistake.
I meant to say that was just your life.
Oh, interesting.
Shit.
Did you just change it?
We have to actually, I'm going to redo my number 3.
What? No.
Because I said it wrong.
We're not editing any of this out, by the way.
Oh, you're just trying to pay me back for Blackened. I said the wrong
and
title.
And the Outlaw Torn. I've gotten all this shit for so long.
Okay, you're right. I meant to say that was just your life. We'll be right back. I know the. But here's the difference. I know the difference between these two songs. Butthole. But he's right. The announcement was, we're back. We're Thrash Kings.
Yep.
Here's an amazingly fast riff. I mean, maybe one of the reasons that he wrote that kind of like a sovereign, never sovereign, live except for Duke a day. Because that's like, it's so syncopated. Like, that's the only way he could sing over
actual
it.
Lyrics, by the way, guys.
Oh, yeah. Like a psycho, liquid, psycho, liquid, psycho, duke a day.
Like a sink.
Without a revival, have no sun on that. On a night. All right. Number two. I went with Master Puppets of the Spider riff.
You did as well. Okay. So there's a repeat from the emails.
I guess we just played that and heard it.
Yeah, we heard it.
I'm still getting used to inserting that shit.
Yeah.
Classic riff.
Yes.
It's hard to fuck with that riff.
Yeah. And hard to play all downstrokes.
Definitely. Man, I would say the song Master of Puppets, for if you're looking for a song to work on speed on downstrokes, just that whole song.
The entire song, yeah.
Because there's all sorts of different, not speeds of it, because it's the same tempo, but there's just different exercises. The spider claw riff thing is one thing.
Yep.
The verses are kind of fast. That thing, you're one of the riffs that you loved.
Yep.
Anyway. My number one favorite James Hetfield riff of all time.
Here we go.
Sad but True.
Ooh. I mean,
it just doesn't get heavier than that.
You want heavy?
Metallica gives you heavy, baby.
Clint gives you heavy at number one.
And there you have it. Those were our top five riffs. I would invite all of our listeners to send theirs in, but we already fucking did that.
We already did that. Give us a recap.
The recap is number five, Disposable Heroes. Number four, Spit Out the Bone. Number three, That Was Just Your Life. Not the end of the line. Number two, Master of Puppets. And number one, The Unstoppable Sad But True.
Awesome. Good list. Good list, Clint.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel really good about it.
Yeah, man.
It took a long time.
And that's something like we've talked about in the past with top 10, top 5 lists that can definitely change.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, there's times where I'm listening to a certain record and I'm like, gosh, sometimes I forget about this riff. It's so good. You know what I thought you were going to have on your list? Is the post-intro riff to Creeping Death.
Yeah. That almost made it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what almost made it was the bridge riff to Creeping Death, but that's Kirk.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's just so iconic. It's like the sound of Metallica is that bridge.
It is. Yeah. How about talking about Hetfield now?
Let's talk about Hetfield. So we're taking...
Again.
Like, we don't do this every time we hang out anyway.
I know.
Every time we hang out, we talk about Hetfield.
Yeah.
This is just an opportunity to hit up some of the stuff we missed. We couldn't cover it all, of course.
Yeah.
And the stuff we're going to kind of talk about now is going to be some of the more fun shit, you know?
Yeah, some fun stuff. And I mean, of course, I mean, there's endless stuff you can talk about this man. I mean, you could do 10 episodes just about him, but we covered a really good amount in the last episode, but there's a couple really fun things we want to talk about in this episode. The first being Hetfield's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction speech.
Man, it's an emotional one.
It is, but it's an exciting one too. Like, he has got a smile on his face the whole time. He's like, he's passionate. He's very thankful.
He's looking good too.
He's looking good. This was like in a bit of his skinny years.
Yeah.
But I mean, he starts off by saying, can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah, you
it's
can.
Very Stone Cold Steve Austin of him. Can I get a hell yeah?
Well, we all know he's heavily influenced by Motorhead, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Of course, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He gets up there, he names all the bands that influenced them. And I think that's an important thing to touch on because they've done that for so long. It's almost like they're passionate about getting their fans who may not know into all these bands that influenced them, that made them Metallica.
He talks about it in the, if any of you guys have seen the, it's on YouTube, it's like a 40-minute making of documentary about Garage Inc. And he talks about putting all those songs on that record. It was just a way to say thank you, bring some attention to those bands.
Yep.
And he actually even takes that moment when he mentions his influences to talk about the bands that have not been inducted.
Yeah.
He talks, so since then, some of these bands have been. He talks about Kiss, Deep Purple,
Rush,
Motorhead, Rush. It's a pretty cool little tribute.
I mean, Motorhead. Why?
Well, don't even get me started on that bullshit.
Why are they not in there?
Well, why is Motorhead in it? And what, you know, there's a lot of bullshit in it.
Of course. Well, I mean, as anybody that's followed the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame knows, I mean, there is a lot of bullshit along that goes along with that. You know, is Rush my favorite band? No. I do like a couple records. Should they have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago? Yes.
And, I thought Kiss was recently inducted, so I can finally get off my high horse about that. But for many, many decades, we've all been scratching our heads about that. And really, Kiss only got in because of fan demand.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was with Rush, too.
It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
He goes on in this speech to thank his quote-unquote higher power for the gift of music.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. We know that. Yeah. Thanks his wife for saving his life many times.
Which I thought was really sweet.
It's very sweet. I mean, he's talked about that before in interviews and stuff like that, that, you know, there's a time like back in the late 90s where she really helped him with his anger issues. I mean, I'm sure she was frustrated, but also right there for him when he was going to rehab and probably very thankful he's going to rehab. And I know how that is with someone you love so dearly. Like, they really can, quote unquote, save your life.
Well, even if it's tough love or whatever, however that sort of took shape.
Yeah.
It was a really sweet moment. And they actually show her in the crowd with their kids. And, you know, she's emotional.
Yeah, totally.
It's such an emotional thing all around.
I mean, she's probably proud. I mean, at this point, he's like many years sober getting inducted, you know. And she's probably looking up at her husband like, man, like, I thought at one point, like, he wouldn't be my husband anymore. Who knows?
That guy wrote Creeping Death.
Oh, my gosh. He wrote one.
Like, she's just probably the person who could care least about that on the planet.
Oh, for sure.
That's a guy who can play disposable heroes while eating an ice cream cone.
Exactly. That's what Francesco was thinking about. He goes on to thank his kids for teaching. And this is where he gets really, almost where like the huge grin comes off his face. And he says, you know, I want to thank my kids for teaching me how to love.
Wow.
And he kind of sits there and stares at him for a few seconds and gives him like a nod.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool, I don't have kids. You do have a kid. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that feeling is like, but I can still feel something when I'm watching this.
I get a little cryy during, I was watching it this morning. I was like, ugh.
Oh yeah, man. Goes on to thank his brother David for the early days of discovering and playing music. I think he says, thank you to my brother David for leaving me the keys to your drum set.
And for leaving the turntable on.
Yeah. But yeah. And hey, as a podcast host here, we're going to go ahead and thank David as well.
Thanks, David.
Hero lies in day.
Hero of the day.
Hero of the Dave.
Hero of the Dave. Oh, that could be a new jingle.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see. This part I really love when he talks about the fans, because obviously, I mean, they've always been a fan-friendly band. They're always good to their fans. And I typed out this most of this quote. I said, I want to thank the fans who are not afraid to share their lives with us and their faith with unwavering support. Mm. I mean, you know, even when Lars got up there, he looks up the balcony and the first thing he says, he's like, this is, you know, this is because of you guys.
Oh, I loved it. I thought that was a really sweet thing for him to say.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, like with a lot of bands out there, their egos completely take over their lives. And believe it or not, a lot of bands forget about their fans. They don't give a shit anymore. They're just like, the fans almost become like an annoyance.
Sure.
You know, they're bugging me. They want to talk to me. They want this. They want that. It's like, well, motherfucker, these are the people that paid your bills for so long and are currently still doing that.
Right.
So I love that this band, Metallica, has done this for so long and always been thankful for their fans. I think it's pretty cool.
And I think they've maybe dipped in and out a little bit, maybe in the 90s. And I think it's just a hallmark of age and maturity. It comes all back around. And humility and stuff. I think you sometimes have to learn it or relearn it. And I think...
Well, they did some of that stuff. They did a lot of that stuff in the 90s, like the... what was the load?
Motherload.
The Motherload. Yeah, they did that kind of stuff. I mean...
Well, they did like promotional things that I think they might have been not forced to do, but they were playing ball with promotional stuff. I think that's a little different than kind of their posture now.
Yeah, that's true. You got a point. And James goes on to, this part was cool as well. All this is cool because we love James. He dedicates his speech to young musicians who are the next generations of music and expressing their passions. He says, dream big and dare to fail. I dare you to do that because this is living proof that it is possible to make your dream come true.
Very cool.
It's so cool.
Which, by the way, for those of you paying attention, little hat tip nod to the lyric to Carpe Diem.
Oh, there you go.
Live to win, dare to fail.
Yeah. Dare to fail.
So fuck all you haters out there.
Yeah, fuck y'all.
No, seriously, fuck you guys.
Are we getting real right now?
What happens when the real world... Wait, what's that? What's the real world quote? When the real world gets real.
Oh, like the MTV show.
Yeah, what did they say? Find out what happens when shit gets real.
I forgot.
When Puck blows a snot rocket on Real World.
True story.
Oh, when people... You're actually pretty good at that. When people stop doing something and start acting real. What is it?
It's something like that.
God dang it.
Someone's going to email us and let us know.
All right.
He says, thanks to all the Metallica members of Metallica, here or not here. Thank you so much for being you and being part of our lives and making my life an incredible adventure.
You're welcome.
No problem, buddy. My pleasure. I almost kind of wish he would have just kind of listed a few, because there's not that many. Even if he would have been like, hey, Ron McGovney, Dave Mustaine.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, I'm not trying to hate here. I mean, I just, you know, it's still something very heartfelt that he said. I know he means it. But it would have been cool if he just gave a little nod and said their names.
Yeah, true.
You blew it.
You fucking blew it, Jimmy.
And then he ends by thanking Lars.
I want to thank Lars for calling me so we can include each other in our dreams of being in the greatest heavy metal band in the world. Thank you.
Now, I don't think he was saying that as like an egotistical, that we're the greatest heavy metal band, but that was like their goal.
Well, because when he says it, he looks right at Lars and with kind of a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Well, A, yeah, he's not being conceited, but B, it's true.
It's true.
I have actually cried at that. Because then he does this big bear hug. He picks him up.
You
and
see
they sort
his
of
family looking on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's great.
And you see this, the sort of A culmination of success that they're realizing together all these years later, even through the some kind of monster toil and trouble that they had, for them to still be together, still be relevant. It's emotional.
Yeah, very emotional.
It's no joke.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of the one thing I want to touch on was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame speech, because it is something very cool. If for some reason you're living under a Metallica rock and you haven't seen it, get online and look that shit up.
Get on the Metallica net.
Yeah, seriously. Metallica surf that shit up.
Yeah, I was like Metallica surf on the Metallica net. Yeah,
no big deal. I was on some Metallica boards and some Metallica chatting with people, you know.
All right.
I may have met a Metallica chick.
Made a Metallica kid. We got Metallica married.
Got Metallica twos.
Jesus, we could do this for hours.
I know.
Another thing we wanted to talk about, because we actually did briefly mention this in our last episode, but when they were rolling out press for Hardwired, it was really fun because we hadn't seen the boys do this in a while, but they all kind of went out and did the Mark Marons and the
Chris Hardwick's podcast.
Chris Hardwick, and they did all the
Metal Up Your Podcast. Wait, they didn't
do
our
shit. Oh, crap, they didn't do that. Yeah. It's only because the show wasn't around then.
That's true. We were only about a month and a half later.
They did the Seth Meyers shit. They did all that shit. But one of the coolest things, in my opinion, that James did is he did the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't super familiar with Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan is a super intellectual, thoughtful, deep cat. He's very interesting. He has a huge array of guests, and he'll go deep. You know,
he'll go deep
with you. And as we know, James is a pretty deep cat himself. So it's an interesting interview. One of the things they talk about is James's move to Vail from San Francisco. And
right.
They sort of talk about, we talked about it a little bit briefly, but that's where his wife was from or where she grew up.
Where she grew up, yeah. Born in Venezuela.
Yeah. Not. What was the trick question?
Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico, yeah.
Yeah, but grew up in Vail, and that was like the initial draw for them to move out of California and go there, like go check it out. Like his family liked skiing and stuff, and she was like, oh, you got to check out the kind of snow we have out in Colorado. So yeah, that was the initial kind of like spark, I guess. And then, but you know, as he talks about in this podcast, he dealt with a lot of stuff in the Bay Area about being a hunter and, you know, not kind of sharing the same views as a lot of people in the Bay Area, even though they're you know, boastfully a very diverse city.
Well, one of his quotes from that interview is he says that they like you if you're diverse the way they're diverse.
Exactly.
Which is sort of the antithesis of diversity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing is, I mean, and this is coming from someone who's a vegetarian.
Excuse me. I don't eat egg. Oh, sometimes I'll eat an egg. I just try not to think about the fact that it's an egg.
Well, I've always found it interesting that, what's happening? Am I getting a phone call?
You're getting a phone call, man. God damn it.
Oh, it's freaking spam or something. Yuma, Arizona. I know nobody there.
I thought for a minute it might have been old Michael Alago.
It was probably Michael.
Should we talk about that?
We got a good one coming up, basically.
All right.
Before we recorded this episode, we had a good long chat with our new best friend, Michael Alago. If you haven't seen the documentary, who the fuck is that guy? The fabulous story of Michael Alago?
Right.
The fabulous journey. I can't remember the subtitle.
I don't know. He corrected us. I don't know.
He did correct us. Yeah. But yeah, we just got done talking to him, so.
You could just look for that coming up. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, the diversity thing, it's a bummer. And it's not, I mean, you know, we travel for our jobs.
Yeah.
I see that a lot in liberal pockets of this country.
It's such a
polarizing climate now. And if you're in a rock band or you're an artist, I think the expectation is that you identify politically with you check all the boxes of the,
right,
of the blue ideology. And I think if you sort of veer in and out of that, because James, to me, seems to be very apolitical in the sense that he doesn't really subscribe either way. He has his beliefs that fit here and fit there, and which I actually tend to gravitate more towards myself as I get older, rather than the I'm on this team, I'm on that team.
I mean, I hate that there is teams.
I do too.
You know, it drives me crazy. And a lot in this podcast, he talks about that, about, you know, people are so hell bent on changing the way you live your life.
Right.
You know, rather than, you know, like people in Colorado, he says, often are enjoying the way they're living their life and not trying to change yours.
Right.
And you can coexist and disagree and be diverse. You can talk about it, but, you know, we don't have to like hate each other over it. And
well,
stuff.
And the irony is that that's actually what, you know, the celebration of diversity actually is.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that a lot politically since November. I mean, it's
absolutely.
Like people are
even before that, it's the whole cycle.
Of course. Yeah. But this one, I feel like it's really come to a head with, you know, certain people in the office.
Orange people.
You know, people tend to like hate each other for it. You know, I tour with people that think one way politically and I might think differently, but guess what? We still tour together. We still enjoy each other's company. We might get in a discussion about it, but we don't hate each other.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's when it does reduce down to hatred, it's a really sad thing.
Yeah.
I'm the same deal. On our bus, there's all sorts of different opinions, and I mean, it can get heated. I mean,
of course,
we're all
yeah.
pretty passionate about it. But at the end of the day, the blue team, red team paradigm really doesn't correlate at all with what real life is like.
Yeah, totally.
When you're living with people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know, a lot of the reason Hetfield ended up leaving, you know, the Bay Area, like we were talking about, one of the stories I like is that, you know, he talks about, you know, his form of eating organic doesn't fly with the others there. And, you know, he brings up, you know, people in San Francisco will go eat meat, go have it presented to them nicely on a plate or in cellophane at the store and stuff. And his idea of eating organic is getting his own food and providing for his family.
Right.
And like I was saying before, as a vegetarian, like I don't have a problem with that. I don't like game hunting and stuff where you're paying like $50,000 to go
poach an elephant or something.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I think that's bullshit. But,
like old Don Jr. If you're dickhead Don Jr.
Yeah, totally. Oh, DJ.
Is it Don Senior Jr. or is it, that's quite.
Don Jr. Jr.
Don Jimmy John Jam.
Yeah, Jimmy John's.
Jim Jam.
But yeah, you know, like there's a lot of people, especially like in the vegetarian world and that get overly, you know, hateful about certain things. It's like, okay, you may not like that someone hunts. That's fine. You don't have to like that. But this person does like it, you know, and this is how they're getting the most organic food for their family possible.
Well, and... You know, to be honest with you and all of our listeners, the idea of James killing a goddamn bear doesn't really excite me, or it's not an aspect of what his hobbies that are very interesting to me.
Yeah.
But it's just, I'm okay just disagreeing with him about that.
Sure.
It's no big deal.
No, just because this is your favorite band doesn't mean you have to agree with 100% of everything they believe.
Right.
You know?
There's just such
like
an
all Kurt or... believes in unicorns. I don't.
Right. Well, it's just such an all or nothing vibe going on around, and it's just
I hate it.
And you know, we're artists, and we live in between that shit, and so I just reject it. You know.
Yeah, me too, man.
Now I think we mentioned Hetfield Honey a little bit in the last episode, but the most fascinating
that should be his business, Hetfield Honey.
Easily the most fascinating part of this interview was like the 30-minute or so detour into heavy bee talk, because Papa Het is a big bee guy.
Yeah, he's been keeping bees for 4 or 5 years now.
They need to make a sequel to Bee Movie and put Papa Het in it.
I know. Yeah, Hetfield Honey, coming to a store near you. Well, I love that it all started with his friend had a couple hives on his property in California,
mm-hmm.
and There was some issue with that guy's bees where like they were swarming a lot and like coming after people because like the queen, I think he talks about it, the queen was some hybrid bee that came over from Africa.
Yeah, the queen had like an Africanized strain.
Yeah, and it wasn't gelling with like the local bees in the area, and so they were kind of aggressive. So his friend's wife was trying to go out to the pool and kept getting attacked. And so he asked Hetfield, like, can I put these on your ranch up in Marin County where he has his big California property? And that's kind of what, I guess, what started this whole thing with him. And now he's got his own. And
well, yeah, he says he's been doing it about 4 years. He's actually in a bee club.
He's in a bee club.
He meets with the other bee aficionados.
James Hetfield, Papa Het, is in a bee club.
Yeah, this basically one of the most important heavy metal songwriters and guitar players of all time spends his recreational time once a month at the bee club.
The bee club.
Talking heavy bee talk.
I mean, I'm into some nerdy shit, and that kind of fascinates me.
Yeah. At one point, James goes, we could talk about this for a long time. I don't want to bore your listeners. And Joe Rogan's like, oh, no, we're going to talk about it. It's like, interesting. And I swear to God, I listened to every second of it. I'm like learning about
30
bees.
Minutes, yeah.
I'm learning about how they make the queens and how they, you know, how they migrate hives and shit.
I like his passion about it, too.
I do,
like,
too.
You can see him getting excited talking about it. It's really cool. Giving honey to their friends. I want a jar of Hetfield honey.
I want a gallon of it. I want to bathe in it. Is that weird?
I want to fuel my car with it. I was just picturing you bathing in honey. It was quite nice.
You know what's funny about that is it's like really hard to bathe with honey. It's real sticky and not real good for bathing.
It probably feels nice.
Yeah.
Now we're going into it.
Yeah.
It probably feels nice laying in it. Like almost like I'm sure if you laid in it, like you'd be kind of suspended. You wouldn't sink because it's so thick.
Yeah, because it's kind of, honey is like kind of buoyant, maybe.
Slightly buoyant. Slightly buoyant. Oh, geez. Really tough to get off, though.
Oh, you're there for days. Unless you have a clapper or something, and you can let someone know that, like, what happened? Well...
Well, I took a bee bath,
man. Because this is something that would happen to Pawpaw.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what happened?
Hey, Pawpaw, how's it going with those hives?
Well, I had kind of a tough week last week. I'll tell you what happened now.
What happened, man?
I ended up getting about 17 gallons of Hetfield honey, and I reckon you're supposed to eat it and put it on toast, but...
I heard it's the best honey.
But what I did was I put it all in the tub, see, because I imagined that laying in it would feel pretty good, and...
I'll bet it does, yeah.
So I put it in the tub, and it took a long time to pour out of the jugs, because it's like molasses, it was slow, and I laid in it, and it felt like I was floating on it, kind of...
Oh, like in space or
something. Well, kind of like floating in space. And
that's cool.
Honey is buoyant, if you don't know that.
Buoyant, okay.
Well, when I had my honey bath, I decided it's time to get out of the bath. Well, I couldn't get up out of it now.
I was wondering how long you were going to go with that.
Had a heck of a time getting out of there. I reckon I stayed in that tub 5 or 6 days.
Wow, man. That's crazy. Well, I'm glad you're back.
Well, thank you now.
You look a little sticky.
Takes about 10 years to get off of you.
Okay. You might be stuck to my couch right now for the rest of the night. So, see you in the morning. I'll make you breakfast.
God.
Again, if you haven't listened to this Joe Rogan episode,
it's really good.
With Hetfield, it's awesome. They talk about all sorts of stuff, but the bee part is incredible.
You know what's really funny is how it starts.
Yeah.
Because all you hear is him go, oh, yeah, moose are great.
Yeah, moose
and James
are great.
Goes, I don't know much about moose. And Joe Rogan goes, oh, they're fucking huge, a huge animal. And they're like, all right, welcome to the Joe Rogan podcast.
A lot of podcasts do that. They just like hit record and whatever the first thing that is said, like Chris Hardwick does it a lot where after his intro, you hear the episode start and it's them walking into the room together.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, we like to edit all that bullshit.
Yeah, we do. Because we're professional. If Chris Hardwick is listening, he needs to take a few notes from Metal Up Your Podcast.
But yeah, in closing on that kind of portion, I thought it was really cool that Hetfield says, you know, I love sustaining my family as organic as possible. I want to be as close to the earth and part of it as possible.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy.
It's real hippie. I love it.
That's that Marin County shit that he ran away from.
Come on, Het.
Come on, Het.
Come on, man. Let's get into some, now this is something that we don't know a ton about personally, but
right.
Let's get into some Hetfield Carr stuff.
You know what's interesting about this? We have a listener named Kay Bell. This is the guy who's written in, I met him on the forums, and he has a huge, huge vinyl collection.
Awesome.
I think he's written into you before,
yeah, yeah.
But we're going to actually have him on the show as a guest because he knows the collecting world so well. He's been collecting throughout all the 80s and 90s. He got off the train a little bit, but he's going to kind of come on the show and talk to us and our fans all about what that world is like.
Yeah, totally.
But one of the messages he sent me is he talked about the psychology of collecting things, and he mentioned, he said, so Kirk collects horror memorabilia.
Right.
Lars actually collects Metallica.
Data.
Lars collects Metallica shit.
Yeah, he hangs on to a lot of that stuff.
And bootlegs and like,
yeah.
Lars is very protective of merch and he collects Metallica shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, and I've done this with certain bands over the years, like anytime we print a new merch design, I take one of each.
Right.
Just to kind of, throw in the attic or whatever.
Right.
But I a little side note, I had a production manager I worked with not too long ago that I believe was either good friends or dated Lars's assistant at one point,
mm-hmm.
kind of in the, I believe, mid-90s, maybe.
Okay.
And it would hang out at his house when Lars was on tour and he was hanging with his girl. And like that's where like Lars's little like studio room was, where he had a little kit set up, and him and Hetfield would go
the
over
dungeon.
Riffs.
Yeah. They called it the dungeon.
Totally. And he said one time he was looking for a bathroom, opened a door, and there was like an unfinished basement area, and all that was in there was a guitar stand with one of Cliff's basses sitting on
Whoa.
It. Not even in a case or in like a display case,
wow.
just on a stand in a unfinished basement.
Well, and he also was a big art collector,
Yes.
And now, so this guy, Kent, was just talking about Metallica, and Michael Olago, in our interview coming out later, maybe next month, maybe next year, I don't know, maybe in 1,000 years, I don't know. Talked about how those dudes just knew what they wanted. They were very in control. He talked a lot about control.
Yeah.
When we think about Master of Puppets and the precision of Injustice for All, it's like they were in the mixing room. They knew exactly what they wanted.
Right.
He's just talking about the sort of how that filters into being a collector of things.
Yeah, sure.
So James is sort of pretty known in the hot rod world or whatever for collecting
very much so.
Hot rods and cars and old
yeah.
shit and.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know much about this episode, so we're going to have to just sort of...
Yeah, like, I mean, I've been to car shows. I've loved going to them because it's a very fascinating culture. And these are beautiful machines that people have spent, like, a lot of time investing. And Hetfield kind of has talked about this in interviews and stuff. But some of the stuff that, there's a cool little piece on him right before they think they did the Orion Festival the first year. And he talks about he loved building things as a kid. He talked about working on cars in relation to writing music and lyrics.
Mm.
Like what you put into this car, sometimes you don't know exactly what you're going to do, but you start working at it,
wow.
and the outcome is different than you expected. And so, like music and lyrics, you and I know this. Jumping into writing a song, you might have an idea what this should look like at the end. Should be like this,
right?
But then, as you're working on it, it just takes little turns here and there, and it comes out a lot different than how you started,
for sure.
So he's talking about working on cars and building cars the same way,
as a metaphor for songwriting.
Exactly,
it's
yeah.
really cool.
Yeah, and he's had a couple cars built by famous hot rod builders and stuff like that. But in that year, actually, at the Orion Festival, they had a thing called the Motor Breath Alley Gallery at the Orion Festival. And it was like custom cars, custom bikes, pinstriping, airbrushing, almost like what you'd see at a car show.
I know. This is what we're going to do a whole episode on the Orion Festival. As many of our listeners know, it's a festival that Metallica started. They did 2 years of it, and then it kind of failed. And... I mean, I think the shows were successful, but
yeah.
they didn't. It, from a business model standpoint, it didn't make sense for them to keep trying to do it.
Well, I think they should.
But the
I
thing
think
is,
they
were doing
right
things
here
at that festival that were so cool. James had a car show. Kirk had his horror museum.
Yep.
Lars had a movie tent because Lars is a massive cinephile.
Yeah.
So Lars had like a movie tent. They had all these crazy bands, not all metal.
Yeah. It was awesome.
And of course, Metallica's headlining. They're doing fun shit like playing the Black Album back to front, Ride the Lightning back to front.
They did. That's what they did.
They
the
did Dayhan
thing. Yeah.
They played Kill 'Em All as this sort of fake band in an afternoon slot.
It's awesome. What I was so stoked on is they had one of my favorite bands of all time on the festival, Rocket from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing. I wish they would keep doing it, or maybe maybe it was half what you're talking about and half like, hey, we're getting into like, we're getting close with these songs. We got to start
an album cycle.
Exactly. We got to start recording sometime soon or really, really, you know, sit down and develop all these songs. And
my friend Drew Holcomb, who's an artist in town, they started a festival in Memphis where he's from called the Moon River Festival.
Okay.
That from everything I can tell from talking to him and his manager and seeing like the people that go, it's really successful.
Yeah, it's great.
But dude, after like a cocktail with him, he starts talking about how hard it is
to run a
festival from the booking and the logistics and the permits. And even, and that's, you know, that's at Drew's level, which is no joke, but at the Metallica level, it's got to be a really hard thing to figure out.
Yeah.
The payoff is once you establish something like a Lollapalooza or an Ozfest, you get to a certain point where it pays for itself and makes sense and it's this big machine. But
right, sure.
Man, I wish it would have worked out because it seemed really cool. And to those of you who got to go, you lucky bastards.
Yeah,
it looked
seriously.
So
I've got
cool.
a friend that got to go to the Detroit one. And
damn.
He told me he was like speeding across the field to go see Dejan because he heard rumor like it's actually Metallica playing Kill 'Em All.
Can you imagine if we were there for that?
Ray Burton side stage? Yeah.
Damn. Would have
been awesome. Right. So James is a member of the Beatniks Coolsville Car Club. And that was something that was started by a tattoo artist named Jack Rudy in 1992. But Hetfield talks about cars as, you know, working on cars is an expression of someone's heart and soul. Cars are like people. They like love. They like to be touched. They like to be driven.
That's cool.
Yeah. And he's been into this for a long time.
Much like me.
Oh, yeah. You like to be touched?
Loved. Driven.
Do you like to be driven? Sorry.
Welcome to Vocal Hour. Drive me.
Hi, welcome to the Quiet Storm.
The Quiet Storm. You've just reached the eye of the hurricane.
Hey.
Aw.
Is it an F5 in here?
To all those out there, by the way, who are affected by the shit weather we're getting on this planet.
Yeah, both of them, man. Yeah, Harvey.
Hope
and
everyone's
Irma.
Cool. Irma, yeah.
Yeah, I had a good number of friends that I tour with and have toured with that all live down in Florida that most stayed. But
that's crazy.
It is. But fortunately, the hurricane looked like it's still bad for the west coast of Florida. But originally, the eye was supposed to go straight up the middle of Florida.
Right.
So yeah, I had friends that stuck it out and they've been posting photos online of damage and stuff. So anyone out there that's been affected by that or Harvey, our condolences. I know that's a tough thing to deal with. We get not as crazy weather here. We'll get tornadoes and stuff, and we've had some flooding. But a hurricane, I can't imagine living in that kind of area. Although I would like to experience one, maybe not a cat.
You're
a cat
crazy.
Five.
You go do it and tell me
like
how
a
it was.
Cat one. I as awful a damage as those things cause, I'm fascinated by that kind of power in weather. It's crazy.
Well, we don't have to talk too long about this. This is more like what we'd be talking about at a bar. But
right.
My take on that is that the planet doesn't give a shit about us, and the planet will destroy us.
Yeah.
And the planet just does not care. Like, people are like, oh, we're destroying the planet. What about the planet? And before anyone gets butthurt, I care about all that. But the planet's going to be fine.
The planet's going to fight back.
The planet's going to wipe us off the face of it.
Even though on the smallest scale, like, you know what happens when you don't tend to your yard? It takes over.
Did
literally.
You ever see that show, World Without People?
It was like a series on Science Channel.
They would take a city like Miami and be like, this is what the city of Miami would look like if there were no people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like 15, 20 years, 30 years later. And just the earth overgrows all of it and crumbles all the buildings.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's a great subject for a metal record. It's brutal.
Meanwhile, back to Papa Het and cars.
Now, cars.
Back to the Beatniks.
Now, emissions.
No emissions testing.
But yeah, so it's really cool that Hetfield has found this love of cars. It goes, I mean, I don't know exactly when he got his first like hot rod or had his first one built. But I mean, there's even footage in A Year and a Half Life of Metallica of him cruising through San Francisco in a hot rod.
Right.
He got in this early. I think a lot of this had to do with even the way he ended up looking for a long time, getting into that rockabilly world, that hot rod world. Getting a ton of tattoos.
Didn't he kind of have like a greaser look for a while?
Around
the World Magnetic, he kind of had the greaser vibe.
Oh, yeah. That era.
And is that what that is? Is that kind of in car culture?
Yeah, kind of a greaser vibe. Like you're into like the Stray Cats, rockabilly stuff, you know? And not everybody has to be. There's punk rock guys. There's people that like reggae music. There's people that probably like jazz, whatever.
You mentioned his tattoos. Let's talk about his tattoos.
Tattoos, mate.
he got a mouthful of cookies.
James has a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, but they're all like really symbolic. There's some very symbolic ones.
There's lyrics tattooed on him. He's got some spiritual stuff on there.
He's got the cliff, the Orion stuff.
Yeah.
He's got his kids' names. He's got the M on his hand.
Yep.
And the F for his wife's name on the other hand, which I think is really cool.
Very cool. He's got Riff Life on his knuckles.
Which is pretty cool because he's the Riff Master.
That's right, man. He knows it.
Got Riff. You know that guitar he has. Got Riff, bro. Riff.
Yeah, I love that he's evolved into this dude who's just covered in tattoos. I mean, I've got a shitload of tattoos.
I was wondering if you could had any interesting insight into that. Is it because you're sleeved up, right? You got sleeves.
Yeah, I'm sleeved up.
You got them on your legs.
Yeah,
you have them on your chest and back.
I got one
and shit
on my chest. My whole back is covered.
Your whole back is covered. Is it the Master of Puppets cover? What is it?
It's a hybrid of that and Red Lightning. You know, it's something that I was really fascinated by when I was younger, before I turned 18. And when I turned 18, or right before, I was like, I'm getting a tattoo. I got to get a tattoo. And it just kind of went downhill. And I'd imagine it was that way for him.
Downhill or uphill?
I'm going to say uphill.
Let's say uphill. There we go. Yeah. Let's turn that frown upside down.
Agreed. But it's something that is also very addictive.
For sure.
So he really started diving into this after he got sober.
Right.
But he still, I mean, if anyone knows out there, anyone that has gotten sober, a lot of times they still have an addictive personality. I have friends like that.
They, 100%.
Yeah, they get into things after drugs and alcohol that they're obsessive over, no matter what that might be. So maybe that became one of Hetfield's new addictions, was getting tattooed. Because you can put something on your body that's going to be very meaningful, that means a lot to you, that means a lot to other people, you know, whether it's, you know, family stuff, or I know he has like scripture on his arm, hot rod stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his birth year in cards.
Right.
It's like a ace 963.
Well, and he's got like flaming cards that allude to the pyro accident.
Right.
He's got lyrics to Carpe Diem Baby. He's got lyrics to Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah. He's got also like a treble clef too. So I think it's maybe near his forearm. I have to look at.
Well, that might be the Orion you're talking about. He's got a clef with to Orion.
Yes, you're right. Correct. That's yeah.
So that would be a bass clef. A bass cliff.
Bass cliff. Yeah.
Here's how I feel about it, because it did seem like he kind of like had an explosion of tattoos. And I'm all about tattoos. I've got 3 or 4. I like them. I want to eventually sleeve up an arm or whatever.
Yeah.
But my image of James is such the Black Album Through the Loads, where he didn't have any tattoos.
Right.
And so I still find myself when we have seen them live on tour this year, or when I go back and dip back into Quebec Magnetic or any of that, it's just it's such a different looking James.
It is, yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm used to it by now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you started to see some, like in the Some Kind of Monster documentary, you started to see a couple tattoos show up.
Right.
And I'm sure those first few were like insanely meaningful to him, you know, because
they were so meaningful to him that he went insane.
Yes. But as time went on, he started getting more and more tattoos. I loved it just because I'm into that culture. I've been getting tattooed, you know, for 20 years now. And the more he got, the more stoked I was. Then one showed up on his neck.
Oh, like, yeah. It's a flaming skull on his neck, right?
I think so. Yeah. 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 You know, he would wear like a tank top on stage, and you see stuff poking out from his chest, mm-hmm. and all this cool stuff, and ended up being like, I think he was in Inked magazine, started getting features on him on tattoos and stuff, and it's all in relation to that car culture too. You know, it's like that's such a big thing in that world. If you go to a car show, there's dudes tattooed like crazy there, and especially him being being a part of the Beatniks Car Club that was started by a tattoo artist. It looks, you know, to me, he's pretty covered now, at least on his arms, that he, you know, he immersed himself in it, you know, whether it was all meaningful tattoos, a part of his sobriety, getting even deeper into car culture. I love it. I love Tattooed James.
I do too. I mean, it is cool that, because I think it's that inked profile where he kind of explains them.
Yeah.
And one of them, he has like an angel on his forearm, and he talks about how it's the angel giving the gift of music to his hands.
Yeah.
And there's fire there. And
yeah.
It's very cool. He's a cool, intense dude.
I think we know that he's cool, man. We've talked about this.
He's pretty cool.
You don't have no idea. James Hetfield is the coolest.
Have you heard Jump of the Fire? It's pretty cool.
You know the song Enter Sandman? Have you heard it?
It goes like...
What is this voice?
This is the cool guy. What cool?
Bro, I just was drinking my Chemex, and you don't know Metallica?
Dude, we're cool.
Actually, I would venture to say that if we walked into the coolest coffee shop in Nashville wearing Metallica shirts, we would probably not be as welcome as we think we would be. Like, well, where the cool kids hang out.
Well, yeah, but it's like got because of the Kardashians and shit are wearing Metallica shirts now. So it's gotten kind of like bizarrely cool.
Yeah. It's just like, it's a trendy, cool thing. I think that phase of like celebrities is over. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't follow that shit. But like Bieber wearing, Rihanna wearing a Metallica shirt. Like now fucking Lady Gaga does it. She's earned it.
Well, dude, Lady Gaga got like a big ass Moth in the Flame tattoo on her back.
Good for you, lady.
And she's a fucking metal fan, too.
Yeah. It's our girl, Lady G, man.
It's weird. I'm like really torn on that because part of me is like, they're like, oh my God, a Kardashian wore a Killer Balls shirt. I can't believe it. Half of me is like, who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit?
But then half of me is like, you take that goddamn shirt off now.
The one that really
bummed you, demon.
The one that made me have that reaction was Justin Bieber. I was like, you little shit.
You fucking demon, take it off.
Here's the thing, dude. You and I and the people listening right now have been into this band for a long time.
We put a lot of heart and soul into it.
Some way more than us, some less than us.
Sure.
That doesn't matter.
Sure.
We're lifers, all of us. I think 100%. We can agree on that. Even if Justin Bieber could name five Metallica songs that aren't on the Black Album, name five on the Black Album,
for
please.
Sure. Yeah.
He's going to get out of his phase of wearing a metal shirt. It's a trendy thing.
Justin Demon.
Yeah. Fucking, he's probably listening to this right now. Well, guess what, dude? Take the shit off. You know what? You probably wore a Master of Puppets t-shirt with the song titles on the back and couldn't name two songs off of it.
You fuckhead.
All right. Sorry, everybody. A little tangent there. A little Bieber tangent. A little bangent.
A metallingent.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Michael Alago, by the way, just texted me the picture of me and you that we sent him, and he wrote cute.
Oh my gosh, awesome.
He's so cool.
I love that dude. You guys are going to hear all about that and why we love him so much.
Let's talk about, so James has done a little bit of narration work, which is pretty interesting.
It's very cool. Well, the controversial one was when he did that series for the History Channel called The Hunt.
Right.
That became decently big news because they were set to play Glastonbury in 2014, and people started protesting, kind of standing up going, hey, we're going to try to get them to not play because we're pissed off because it's a bear hunting documentary series.
Well, and he's not in it killing bears. He's just narrating it.
He narrates it. Yeah. You know, I don't personally think it's cool to kill bears.
Yeah.
That's
such a nice way to say that.
Well, I don't want to get tore up and get in an argument about anybody. Like, I don't see the point. There's no point in arguing about it.
Well, here's the deal. It really is as simple as that. Like, I don't think it's cool to kill bears, but
I don't have a problem with someone like Hetfield killing this animal, and he's harvesting all that meat, doing all the grunt work that no one wants to do before it shows up on their plate at a restaurant.
Sure.
Bears, it's not very common to eat bear.
Right.
It's not a common delicacy.
Well, he talks in Some Kind of Monster about when they killed the bear, someone asked him if he ate it, and he said no, because we killed bears that had been hibernating, and when bears hibernate, their blood is filled with like toxin because they've not been, how shall I put this, eliminating.
Yeah.
It's kind of just sport.
I will say it's kind of sporty of James to kill a bear hibernating.
And again, it's his prerogative. It's not going to be a hill I ever fucking die on. But to get back to what we were saying earlier, it's like, I can't imagine protesting even Justin Demon if he did something I didn't like. And I wouldn't go protest him playing a show somewhere.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
I mean, I, of course, there are things in this world that are worth protesting.
Absolutely.
If all of a sudden Metallica came out and we found out they were the most racist band in the world, it'd be a big bummer.
Sure.
And you might, you'd want to protest that. That's just right and wrong to me. But something like this, it's like, he narrated a freaking series. Right. If you don't agree with it, you don't agree with it. I don't care if he narrates something. I don't agree with that act. However, I still love this band.
The one that he did that personally kind of bums me out even more is he did this documentary called Addicted to Porn.
Yeah.
Chasing the Cardboard Butterfly.
Yeah. You and I have discussed this a little bit, nothing in depth. But this is something that I haven't seen this documentary, but...
Go watch the trailer. It looks horrible.
Yeah. The idea of porn addiction, I definitely think, is a real thing.
Sure.
Some people don't. Some people don't have an issue with it. Some people can watch it casually. I choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like out of respect for my wife, I shouldn't, And
what if she gave you permission to?
honestly, I don't know if I have that much of an interest in it.
Right.
I was never somebody growing up that watched a ton of it. Like, when when like your family gets the internet, like I remember I got a computer and I was like, oh my God, I can search for whatever. And of course, you know, as like a teenager, I was like, what do I search for? Boobs or whatever, you know, like, and it was very intriguing, you know? Right.
Well, this was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we got the internet 2 weeks ago. I don't know how we've been uploading all these episodes.
You're typing boobs.
Yeah.
Let's Google.
I do remember, for me personally, at a younger age, watching some stuff and realizing, I feel like this could get dark for me.
Sure.
Like an addiction, you know? And I think...
An Egyptian?
Like an Egyptian, yeah. Dark like an Egyptian.
We're doing a hard edit here because we were going to go off into a long philosophical porn talk that maybe should be abbreviated for the show.
Yeah, anyway. Maybe a little abbreviated. I mean, my main point was basically at one point I saw, you know what, this isn't really, I can see myself getting into a dark place.
Right.
And I understand someone like James maybe having a passion to be involved in something like this because he's dealt with addictions of other kinds.
Yeah. And all that's fine with me. And I'm not like some huge advocate for porn.
Right.
I look at porn like chocolate cake. It's delicious. You shouldn't eat it every day.
Right.
You don't have good information about what constitutes a healthy diet.
Yeah.
If you're eating chocolate cake. And I kind of see sex that way. And I also come from a very prudish religious background. So I've my voice in that is just one of like pushing back on kind of,
sure,
oh, it, you know, it's an addiction because people are so scared of it. I think people are definitely addicted to it. I think that's a real thing. I don't think it's made up. And I know that James, he's an addict and it's something he thought was important. And here's my problem. I watched the trailer for it.
Yeah.
And the trailer is real heavy on the moralizing side of it.
Okay.
That it's not good for your family, that it's not good for your health and your, it's like, to me, it just sort of overgeneralizes what might be a problem with it. It's
sure.
not a very nuanced
sure.
conversation. And so I reject that first of all. And then to see like my hero, my boy,
narrating.
It must be the way that people who are really like animal rights people must have felt. I mean, I'm not going to protest fucking Glastonbury, but
right.
I guess I put that puts me in their shoes a little bit.
Okay.
Where I kind of maybe understand what bummed him out about it.
Because
sure. they feel like he's endorsing it.
Right, right.
When really, it's just a narrating gig.
It is. But, I mean, you probably wouldn't narrate something you were maybe against
for
or
sure.
something, you know?
Well, what he says on the Joe Rogan interview, because they talk about it, because Joe Rogan's a hunter also.
Yeah.
Is he talks about it in that way. I think he even says it's something he really believed in. And James was like, he was like, really what it is I was interested in doing narration. And so I think his manager put feelers out.
Yeah.
And that's what came back. And he was like, I was just interested in doing it. And yeah, I hunt. Or he might say, yeah, I think pornography is dangerous. So, but he does talk about the emphasis being on, I just want to get into that world. Like,
right.
I wonder
yeah.
if we're going to see more narration from James in the future.
I'd be down.
Like, imagine him doing a fucking badass hot rod documentary.
That would be very cool.
I would watch that, and I don't even care much about hot rods.
Yeah, hot rod documentary, history of tattooing documentary, something like that.
The history of tattooing, going all the way back to 1982.
1982.
When did tattoos start? That's like
ancient. I don't
know
the exact
shit.
Year. Oh, yeah, it's very ancient. Yes, very.
Like 1962.
61, yeah. Pre-James Hetfield's birth.
You know what I want to talk to you about? Since we're kind of riffing on James, and we're going to wrap it up here soon. We've kind of talked about a lot of shit, but one of the things I wanted to explore with you is James's personal feelings in his lyrics.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this a lot today. I don't think we see much of it until the Loads. And I know our listeners, like Clint's fanboying out on the Loads. I think we have touches of it. I think Fade to Black.
Yeah,
we
have Fade to Black.
I think we have Dire
God
Eve,
That Failed.
God That Failed for sure. Nothing Else Matters for sure.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that we all resonate and connect with his lyrics so much when I don't think his lyrics were super personal.
Yeah.
He told a lot of great stories.
Sure.
Creeping Death is a story. One is a story. Sanitarium is a story.
I like James getting personal.
I do too.
I think it's awesome.
I think he wore that vibe really well. Because you know what else I think? I'm curious what you think about this. I don't think that Death Magnetic is a very personal record. I think Unforgiven 3.
I think that was just your life.
Like a general without a mission.
Like the poison that I swallow. I think it's about addiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's about his old life as an addict.
Interesting.
That's what I get out of it.
Okay, cool.
You know, especially when I first heard it, he says the line, like, the poison that I swallow. I'm like, okay, it sounds like alcohol. You know?
Right before it goes, well, that one was on a day. That's true. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's personal stuff in there. And you know what? Sometimes writers like disguise personal stuff with stories.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, sometimes guys write from a third person. They write from, you know, just from the perspective of somebody else in this, whatever story they're trying to tell, or disguise it in stuff that already is a current story, like Creeping Death thing is very biblical or whatever.
Right.
You know, maybe there is personal stuff in there that he kind of hides in there, but I don't know.
Well, for sure. And I didn't mean to paint it so broadly, like none of that shit was personal.
Sure.
You know, From the Bell Tolls is a Hemingway story, but I hear a lot of personal. I don't know. It's music's so interesting because that shit resonates with me.
Yeah.
Just the way he even delivers that vocal, Make Us Fight on the Hill in the Early Day. I'm like, I don't ever want to do that, but right. I feel a lot of personal
feeling.
I think
it's a song about paintballing.
It's a song about paintball.
Well, and you know, the other thing that's great about music, especially, you know, a lot of stuff Hetfield writes is even if, you know, you're way off base with what a song is about. Sometimes that song can still affect you in a certain way in relation to what you're dealing with at the time.
For sure.
Even though that song has nothing to do with what you're going through, but something about the clicks. Like I've listened to songs over the years where I'm like, man, that's really hitting me hard during this time or making me happy during this time or whatever. And then I find out it's like not even a positive song. It's like a really dark, depressing song.
Well, that's kind of the story of Alive by Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Is that it was actually sort of a dark suicide song.
Yeah.
Like he was saying like, oh, I'm bummed that I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And it became this huge hopeful anthem of celebration of life.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is interesting. And I don't know. I should not think out loud so much on the show. You know what I was going to say?
Yeah.
It is something I do appreciate about Saint Anger. I think it's a low point lyrically for James.
Of course, yeah.
But there is no denying, really, that it is a very personal record.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's when he was writing those, you know, well, him and the rest of the guys writing some lyrics.
Flushing it out.
Yeah. You know, they're, you know, James is writing some of this stuff like months after being out of rehab.
It's pretty raw.
Yeah, very raw. You know, and while you know, quality-wise, it may not be the best stuff he's written, there's still real feelings there. And there's still, you know, real issues he's dealt with. He's trying to get out of his soul and his heart, you know?
Yeah, and I think he just got so stripped down that he, you know, I have referred in the past to the Saint Anger as this sort of rehab lyrics, because I think he was just writing his treatment, and I don't think that makes for a great poetry, really. I think he did it best on The Load and Reloads because those lyrics are really shrouded in mystery, but they feel so personal. And then a song like Mama Said about his mother, Low Man's lyric about infidelity, and Fixer about his parents. And to me, it was just a real highlight of his personal shit. But I have come to really appreciate the rawness of Saint Anger.
Yeah. I'm getting into it.
Well, we got our Saint Anger episode coming up next week.
I did get a message through Facebook recently, and it was a new listener who recently got into our podcast, and he was like, what's up with all the hate for Saint Anger? And I wrote him. He was very cool about it. And I was like, look, man, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's my least favorite record, but we are diving into that record. And he brought up some points about there's some really good riffs on there, this and that. And I did agree with him because I have been diving into the record. So it's coming up, man. It's by the way, it's going to be our last album to cover.
Yeah, we've saved it for the last,
For the first round. I'm sure eventually we'll revisit all these albums, maybe with guests and stuff like that. But this is the final record.
It's the final full-length studio record.
Yeah.
And I think it was appropriate that we saved it for last because I've been on a journey, like our listeners, like you, over the last 9 months. I feel a love and appreciation for the band that I haven't felt in a long time.
Yeah.
It's actually the best time since the record's come out for me to really give it a fair shake.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I with this podcast, like I'm in so deep with all these records and everything Metallica, you know, because we have to be, even though there's still mistakes made. But that's the one I've kind of kept pushing to the side. But now I'm kind of like, okay, I gotta really dive into this to do a decently quality episode.
I think so, and I appreciate that you're doing that. I know our listeners do too. I've found it pretty rewarding, and I mean, I have to take it on its own terms. That's really the key that I've realized is I have to take it on its own fucking terms, and I don't like that because their other records don't really have that. Their other records are brutal and very much like we are what we are.
Yeah.
But they're just so well written and so beautifully composed that they can hit you in so many different layers. St. Anger is kind of a one note ting ting that you have to kind of get on board with it.
It's definitely a ting ting in
there. But once you get on board with it, there's some little nuggets in there.
Well, yeah, I was texting you that one time about, you know, turning it down. We got to red lights. I was kind of embarrassed. I was listening to it. But then I'd be driving and I was like, wow, that's a really good riff. It's just, it just doesn't sound great. And it's just everything about it doesn't, you know, isn't the right, you know, the right package.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's, I know there's a lot of great stuff in there, and I will be diving into this a lot more this week. So,
well, so we got that coming up next week. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Yeah.
Here at the end, we just want to remind you, if you can take a minute, please go to iTunes. It only takes a goddamn minute. Leave us a positive review. It's really helpful for us. There's our Patreon, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. If you want access to our exclusive EP of covers, yep. Ethan played me earlier today his versions of, can I say the names of the song? The name of the new one?
Yeah, sure.
He played me his version of the Freydens of Sanity.
Yeah.
He played me Sanitarium. It's fucking awesome.
It's going to be cool. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
We'll do another EP teaser soon before we drop that biatch.
Yeah, but maybe not. I don't think we're gonna play any more full songs, man.
No, we'll just do clips. Yeah, we'll just do clips. So Patreon's kind of where it's at. Hit us up, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com, if you have any questions or if you have a zany story to tell. We might read it on the show.
We love zany stories.
Oh my god, I love zany.
Yeah. Here's some zany stuff. Come on, guys.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. All that stuff. Come find us. Come say hello. Spread the word. Tell all your Metallo nerd buds about it.
Please do. We're waiting for you.
And I guess with that, we'll just go ahead and say peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.